This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Train a Happy podcast with me, Tally Rye. This is the podcast that helps you have a feel-good relationship with fitness, food and body image. And this week I am chatting to Lucy Bishop. You might know Lucy as Lucy B Yoga, but she is the inclusive yoga queen. And we had a really important discussion today about inclusivity in yoga and in general in the fitness space. And I think what she is doing is wonderful in terms of bringing size inclusivity specifically to yoga spaces, which is so important. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation today because Lucy was fab. But before we get into that, it is time for Train Happy Trooper of the Week. This week's Train Happy moment comes from Joe, and Joe says, I started Couch to 5K again after my strop earlier in the year when I absolutely hated it. But I'm doing it this time because I want to, not because I feel like I have to. But I was thinking when I was out earlier that back many moons ago when I was, quote, fit, and did Couch to 5K for the first time, how I really struggled to walk. The walking parts? My ego went a million miles an hour. What are people going to think if they see me walking? Walking is rubbish. Nobody else knows I'm supposed to be walking, so they'll think I'm cheating or being lazy. I don't need to walk because I'm fit enough, etc., etc. And this time round, I do not care what other people might be thinking. And actually, they're probably not even noticing me at all. So I thought of you this morning and had to share it with the Train Happy podcast. Joe, I love this Train Happy moment because it truly reflects the difference between an intuitive mindset around movement when you're the one dictating why you're moving, how you're moving, and going on how you feel versus doing things because you should do them and you should be worried what other people are thinking. And like you say, your ego is so part of it. And yet I love that you've been able to let the ego go and just do you because you know what's best for your body and it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. So I hope this inspires other people who are maybe or are runners or have had the rule in their head that if they run, they have to run nonstop because it's not true. As you say, walking is just as valid. If you need to run, walk, go for it. Like, no issues whatsoever. It doesn't make your run any less of a run. So that is so important to hear. Thank you, Joe, for sharing. So if you have a Train Happy moment you would like to share with us, then please get in touch. You can find us on WhatsApp. Put +44 in front of it if you're an international listener, and you can message us to 075-999-27537. Send us a voice note, send us a text. We want to hear from you. But enough from me. It is time to get into this week's episode with Lucy Bishop. Lucy, welcome to the podcast. So pleased to have you. And I'm so pleased to virtually meet you because I've had so many sort of mutual people say like, oh, Lucy's fantastic. I've recommended so many people to you. So to actually get to have a conversation on the podcast is really cool.
That's so nice. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so, so, so excited to be here. I was literally listening to your podcast this morning. So,
episode?
The one that came out today.
With Kim.
With Kim, yeah. Kim's work is really amazing. Such a great conversation. And I'm so happy to be chatting to you. And likewise, I have had loads of people tell me how brilliant you are. So it is so lovely to have this conversation and to virtually meet.
Yes, I feel like we have
yeah, a lot of alignment in our approaches. And it was actually Ashley from Boom Cycle, who teaches like very inclusive spin classes, who recommended your work to me. Like, it's so important to have those other instructors and trainers and people who are working in this space, maybe in slightly different capacities, but who get it. Yeah, so I imagine, sure, like having that network is really important for you.
Yeah, and I really have only built that network over the last few years, like by being on the internet and finding people through Instagram, through TikTok. Without that, I really don't know how everyone working from this health every size approach, from this size inclusive approach, would have found each other before, because it's such a minute part of all of the different movement and wellness industries. And it's so amazing to feel like you're not the only person plugging away at doing the thing, that there is this community of people who can support you and you can ask questions to. And it's, yeah, been so, so lovely to build that community.
Agreed. I think social media has so much credit in this, actually. Like, it gets such a bad rep, but I wouldn't be doing this, any of this, for a variety of reasons. And I wouldn't have discovered, I don't think, a size inclusive health every size approach at all if it wasn't for social media. I mean, I think, you know, if you think of intuitive eating, Evelyn Tribble and Elise Resch wrote the first intuitive eating book in 1995. That was the kind of first iteration of that particular sort of anti-diet nutrition approach. And that's, I feel like, only really caught, really kind of blown up in the last 10 years. And that's, yeah, because of blogging, then social media, Instagram, TikTok, all these places are really bringing the stuff into the mainstream and to people who may not have heard it before. So yeah, we as much as we can criticize things, yeah, especially social media, like it's got some good sides. And yes, connecting us and connecting these kind of, this way of thinking is really powerful. So for those who don't know you, you're a yoga teacher, and I was reading about your own journey a bit and how you had gone to yoga for years as kind of punishing your body and a way to change your body, and always felt like a bit left out of that and didn't feel seen, didn't feel represented. And I'd just be really interested to hear your experience and what that feels like, because I think maybe some people listening don't know what that feels like, and others certainly do. So I would just love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, of course. I started practicing yoga when I was 18, purely the physical part of the practice, asana, the postures, wasn't really aware of anything beyond that. And it was just something, I think, when I was in sort of height of eating disorder or height of sort of dieting, masking eating disorder behavior, but like not as serious as my eating disorder, so it didn't really feel like it was a problem, which was, I guess, the majority of my 20s. I felt really drawn to yoga. I kept sort of doing like extreme 21-day passes and going every day, and then like not doing it for 6 months, and then finding a hot studio and going twice a day, and these really like punishing, horrible like relationship with that movement, being like, this is exercise and I need to get it done and I need it to be the hardest, and it doesn't matter if it hurts or it doesn't connect to my body, that's not the point. But alongside all of that, there was this thing that kept bringing me back to the practice that I can't really put into words necessarily, but there was something about it that like didn't make me feel terrible in the same way that other sort of movement I was coming to in an extreme way did make me feel. Like, I've never, now I have a health at every size PT and I do have like a regular relationship with the gym, but in those days I couldn't keep that up with the gym, but I always came back to yoga. But then saying that, it was often very uncomfortable. I often had comments made on my body. People were like very surprised that I had a practice and had an ability to do quite a strong practice. I felt really just physically uncomfortable in the space, like I couldn't take up space with my body. And I think I had experiences where people were visibly disgusted by my body, like wouldn't adjust my body. I had experiences where people would talk to me like I was a beginner before actually asking me if I had a practice, or being I once had a teacher be really verbally complimentary in quite a condescending way for quite a long period of time in a public class. And that made me feel really uncomfortable. I felt it was always being singled out in what was meant to be this group experience. And because what was being taught to me was we must go hard, there's alignments you have to do, there's not options you have to do, I was like, when I get small or when I'm really strong, then this will be the practice that makes me feel good. And it wasn't until I really addressed my relationship with food, I really addressed my relationship with my body, that then I came back and was like, oh, there are other ways to do this. There are other paths. And there are teachers out there that if I go into their classes, don't make me feel like I don't deserve to be here or I need to change to be here. Because I think there's so much in so much of wellness that is aspirational. Like when yes. we look like the instructor, then we will be happy. Then we will have everything. When we have, you know, the floaty clothes and we've gone fully vegan and committed and, you know, we have the energy of walking on water, that's when true happiness happens. And I think as anyone who's had a relationship with movement that has been aspirational or a relationship with wellness that has been aspirational and they've gone up the ladder a little bit and realized that nothing underneath is unknotted or unsorted out and it just feels like an empty, hollow victory, I think anyone who's had that experience, which I'm sure almost all of us will have had on some level, that's the lesson, isn't it? That it's never about how you look and it's never about doing something which takes you further away from yourself. We want to do things which bring us back. But it's hard when the whole world is telling you you need to change, that to know that you are innately perfect and you are innately whole and that there is nothing you need to do to have to be valid. Like, it's hard to remember that, I think, when the whole world is telling you otherwise.
Absolutely. Like you say, having instructors who that the vibe is like, train like me to look like me, that is the goal. And especially with yoga, which is a spiritual practice.
Yeah.
That having that be the focus, that you're trying to do this to change the external, to manipulate your body in some way, I feel like is kind of counterintuitive to yoga itself.
Yeah, it's absolutely a part of the cultural appropriation that happens with yoga, that this westernization, this celebration of the thin, this celebration of one type of body. I mean, it's as simple as if all of your mats are really close together in a yoga studio, maybe you have great inclusive teachers, but you're telling everyone that there's one way to be and you need to fit into this little square. And if you can't fit into this little square, you know, you're not welcome in this whole spiritual practice, which has so many lineages and so many ways you can interact with it. And almost all of them, you don't need to be physically moving your body to engage in. And it does feel like a real bastardization of the intentions of yoga. And I think as a teacher in the West, that's always a really complicated thing to be working around and to be reflecting on, and how size inclusivity from my perspective feeds into that as well. It's a big topic.
It is a big topic, isn't it? And that is one of the sort of part of that whitewashing of wellness in and of self and yoga, that it's become more of like a Gwyneth Paltrow thing rather than its roots. And yeah, I imagine there's a lot of sensitivity that you have to, you know, work with as a teacher and to kind of create that environment that, like you say, because I think, you know, your experience bringing in that size inclusive element as well is also super important and super valid and super necessary. And also, you don't want to be kind of treading on the toes of those who, you know, where this is their culture, you know?
Completely. And I think we must honor the roots of yoga, what all teachers, and we must all do things to extend our learning around that. And also practices evolve and they need to be supportive to the people that they are coming to. Like Ashtanga yoga, which is where a lot of the vinyasa style lineages come from, was designed for teenage boys. And I don't have a body like a teenage boy. Like, of course I have to adapt the physical shapes. Can I think about what the intentions of those movements are and recreate them for different bodies? Absolutely. That's absolutely possible. And we can honor where yoga has come from and evolve the practice to support people who are living in the here and now. I think that is, both things can be true.
So Obviously, you had your personal practice. Then what has drawn you to, you know, for this to be your career, your work?
Yeah, I actually did my yoga teacher training like over 10 years ago. After I came out of uni, I got a job teaching English through the Power of Theatre when I graduated, and I got like a lump sum of money that at the time I thought was loads and loads of money. And either I was like, I can get a flat in London that's not really horrible for a couple of months and then probably really struggle to pay the rent after that, or I can do something fun. And my friend was doing a yoga teacher training, and I'd like done a bit of yoga, and I was like, yeah, I'll go do this yoga teacher training. I'll go to India. That sounds amazing. And it was amazing, but it also really consolidated the idea that I shouldn't be a yoga teacher. Like, I walked away from that training going, this was great. I learned so much. What was celebrated here was not people like me being in the space. Like, it was definitely people who could do the most complicated postures, who had the strongest practice, who received the most celebration in the training. And I walked away really confirmed that someone who looked like me shouldn't be a yoga teacher, which is quite sad, I think.
Yeah, that is.
But also at the time, I was still very much dieting, still very much engaging in disordered behaviours. I don't think I would have, if I went into that training now, I think I would really have the space to advocate for myself and ask the questions I wanted to ask and enable that training to have more of a focus on inclusivity for me. But at the time, I just like didn't have that language, didn't have that understanding. So then I put that to the back of my mind. I started a theatre company when I came home. I worked in theatre and I worked as a movement director. So I was always teaching movement and working with different bodies and working with different movement abilities. And I did a little bit of yoga teaching here and there, but like really not very much. And then the pandemic happened. Theatre went to bed for a bit, and I didn't have any work, and I was like, what am I going to do for money? And then I was like, oh, I have this yoga teacher training, but like I can't be like a full-time yoga teacher. I was teaching privates here and there to sort of people who looked like me, and I was like, no one's going to want me in the yoga space, no one's going to hire me at a studio, like there's no way. But my friends were like, you should be teaching, like you'd be really good, you should start doing this. So in the first summer of lockdown, when we were allowed outside, I was teaching small groups in parks, and I really loved it. And I felt just so peaceful in that and so connected. And it really felt like the right thing to be doing. It was a real like aha moment, like this is where I'm meant to be. And then I kept sort of like renting community spaces and doing my own thing. And then on Instagram, a studio got in touch with me and they were like, we love what you're doing. We'd love you to bring it into our studio. And I was like, oh, people want more inclusive practices. And then from that, I started working with more studios. I started my online platform. And also I started running trainings for other teachers to have more size inclusive practices, because I think what happened in my teacher training is really the norm for a lot of trainings, and also a lot of people who are attracted to becoming yoga teachers because of the experience, because we haven't had teachers in bigger bodies. We haven't had that representation, especially in the UK. I think in America, like fat politics is so much further ahead of where we are now. But because we haven't had that representation, there are just not that many plus size bodies coming through teacher trainings. So when you're on your teacher training, you're teaching your fellow students who are often other people in smaller bodies. So they just, even if there is an inclusive element to the teaching, you don't get that practice. So that is something I feel really passionately about, is allowing other teachers to support everyone in all bodies, because I don't think it should just be plus size teachers teaching plus size bodies. We all need the skills to support everyone in every body so that we can integrate and practice together. I think that's the ultimate aim. Yeah.
It's inclusivity, isn't it? I understand the need for people to have a safe space in the sense of, for example, I've got a client who is in the US and they have found a class that's specifically called fat yoga. And they were like, I didn't even know that, because I feel so not welcome in the kind of regular classes, that I need this because I need to build my confidence here. But you're right, the ultimate goal is to integrate all of that together, because it shouldn't be, right, you need a special thing. And yes, there are going to be certain accommodations that are really important, especially for those in bigger bodies. And also all instructors and all teachers should have the tools to navigate all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I co-run a company called Big Yoga Club, and we run monthly sessions, which are specifically for people in bigger bodies. But that's more about meeting in community than it is about segregating from the rest of the yoga community and allowing us to discuss and chat and talk about how it feels to be in this space and move together. And I really, like you said, think both things are needed. Like, yes, if there is a group which is marginalized, that group deserves that support and understanding together, but they also should be welcome everywhere.
Totally. Like, we all need in our lives people who get it. And if you're finding them in a yoga class because you're practicing with people that get it, that, you know, that, and you're within a teacher who's like, not even, you know, you're not having to necessarily go, all right, I need this, 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 that you're already kind of preempting a lot of that. That's so important and needed. So I think it's great you're doing that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's really like grounded feeling when you were like, I know that this is what I'm meant to be doing, that all the pieces are falling into place. And that doesn't mean it's not hard. It doesn't mean you don't have to work really hard, but it feels like where I'm meant to be. And that is, so such an amazing feeling after it being a space that I felt so unwelcome in. And then also me putting my preconceptions about being unwelcome in that space. Like, it's only in the last couple of years I've really built a community of yoga teacher friends, because I'm like, yoga teachers won't want they won't want anything to do with me. And that's obviously not true. Mm. I've just felt so rejected and so uncomfortable that I've removed myself so that I don't, because I'm scared. And now I feel like I'm pushing that away and allowing myself to be in the space and take up space and connect with people from all different experiences. And that has been, really energizing and just wonderful.
What's the conversation been like with other yoga teachers? Have you found other people kind of doing what you're doing? Have you found other people who've gone, wow, I really respect that you're really carving out this sort of niche in this industry that's so needed. I really want to learn from you. Or is it other people who are like on a similar wavelength?
So I'm based in London, and there's like a small group of plus size yoga teachers in London that I'm aware of, like under 10. And there must be thousands of yoga teachers in London. I've definitely found more plus size and inclusive community online spread out, which has been so great to chat and talk about ideas and also talk about bad experiences. I think my general interactions though are like, what you're doing's, especially with straight size yoga teachers, is like, what you're doing is so great, that's really cool. And then some people are like, let me learn about it, I want to lean in. And then some people are like, I think I'm inclusive enough. And I'm like, I don't know if you, because in my trainings, we don't just go, this is a posture and this has a few different ways that bigger bodies can interact with it. Like, we talk about fat politics, we talk about weight stigma and the impacts of that on plus size people, and we talk about the why size inclusivity is so important. And I think if you haven't engaged in that, and if you live in a smaller body, you might not have needed to this point, that, you know,
totally.
if it wasn't involved in, like, what's pushing you to learn about that? And as much as I think we all should be learning about it, like, you know, I think it's that would be amazing, but I think people need a way in, people need a reason to learn. And I think sometimes people think size inclusivity is, we just add a block in here and there. And it's like, no, it's about understanding that all of your students could benefit from having more options, from having open language, from not doing alignment cues, from integrating the breath work, the philosophy, the meditation. Like, it's specifically for plus size students, but everyone benefits from more inclusive practices, and we need to understand the why. So if a teacher knows how to add adaptations with blocks, like, lovely, great, more of that. But I do think there is like sometimes a bit of resistance to being like, well, I'm not, you know, I don't have stigma towards fat people. I don't have anti-fat bias. And it's like, well, we all do. I do. I am a fat yoga teacher whose job it is to make people more inclusive. And I am still working against my own weight stigma, like, because of the world that we're in. And I think people don't want to sometimes have conversations about the fact that we're all taught to hate fat people, But it's important to have those conversations because I don't know how you move forward without them. I think sometimes people just want to kind of like gloss over it. And it's just, you know, like the shiny, shiny, lovely, lovely wellness world. It's like, no, we need to like get into the grit of this and feel uncomfortable. And then from that, we can grow. So I would say mixed. I would say people are up for it on the surface, but sometimes I think a little, especially in London, where I think the type of wellness we have here is naturally the most inclusive. Mm. I don't think that's what's been bred here. But also we have the biggest range. So the things that are inclusive are so good. And there are people creating such amazing spaces. But then we also have like the other end of that.
I'm hearing a lot of parallels. And, you know, if we have conversations around race, say, and no yeah, one exactly. wants to say I'm racist. And yet if you're swimming in white supremacy, like you have been touched by it. Like, you know, yeah. And it's the same thing, isn't it? Like no one wants to admit that because no one wants to think, oh, everyone thinks that I now hate fat people. And the truth is, like you say, this is a conditioning. This is a societal yeah. conditioning that we have all experienced. So no, you're not going out of your way to harm or hurt people. And yet some of the assumptions you might have, some of the, you know, like assuming that every person in a bigger body coming to your class as a beginner is anti-fat bias because you're assuming that they can't do any, they can't, they haven't done it before, or they're beginners and they're on their weight loss journey. And all, even just assuming someone's on a weight loss journey is anti-fat bias because you've,
yeah, completely.
You've already gone, well, clearly they'd want to be in a smaller body, or, you know, oh, they must want to be in a smaller body. That is anti-fat bias. And often it's your own biases projected onto other people because you feel like that about yourself. So all yeah, of completely. This is, it, you know, it's not that this stuff doesn't exist in a vacuum. And I think people, but you're right, it's scary to feel like you can acknowledge that. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, the term like anti-fat bias, I think may be more helpful for people than fat phobia, say. Like I'm yeah, fat phobic completely. Because I think an anti-fat bias is like, yeah, I hold these biases and I can challenge them and I can change them. And, you know, I'm not held in this position forever. Like I can learn, I can grow, I can do better. And that's all people want. People want people to try yeah. to do better. And I feel like that is true in so many spaces, whether we're, you know, talking about so many things, whether it's racism, sexism, like let's just try, you know?
Yeah. And it's an unlearning. Like yeah. we don't yeah, come into this world with these preconceived ideas. Sometimes when there's so many things that we are trying to unlearn, we're trying to unlearn weight stigma, we're trying to unlearn racism, classism, all of it, it can feel really like there's so much and it's so heavy and it's hard, difficult work. But also I think we didn't come into the world with all of this stuff. It was stuff that we've added along the way. And that gives me, sometimes when I'm finding it really hard, it gives me a little bit more hope in like it's things we're taking off. Mm. We're not taking things that are innate to ourselves away. We're peeling off those layers that were put on us repeatedly all the time. Mm. But then coming back to, yeah, knowing that everyone has innate worth and value and they don't need to do anything to prove that.
Yeah, and having that kindness and grace with yourself of going like, I'm a human being. I've clearly learned a lot of stuff. I've internalized it as well. And now I, like you say, now I can peel off the layers. I love that. I can yeah. peel off the layers.
Which is also what I think my yoga practice has been really helpful for, being able to sit in that discomfort and also trying to come back to sort of my innate yeah, self and my value, and not having, like we learn with diet culture, that I have to earn my value, that there is moral value in being better at yoga. And I think also better at yoga is sort of, you know, a non-term. You can't be better at it, but we've, in terms of like the postures, there's no moral value in holding a handstand for 5 minutes, but we place that on. There's no moral value in eating celery over a cake, but we put that on. And again, it's taking it all away, peeling it off. It's not real. It's so, so hard when you see your pal holding a 5-minute handstand video and then you're like, I'd love to be able to do that. That looks really cool and fun. But it's obviously doesn't matter. Like, it's fun to try. It's fun to learn. It's great to have goals. It's great to have things you're working towards. But ultimately, if it makes you, again, feel like that stick you're going to beat yourself with, it's just no point, is there?
I know that years ago, I think it may have been like 2018, I went and I was really lucky enough to go and do a yoga retreat in St. Lucia. So I can't complain. It was stunning.
Amazing.
But I felt so shit about my yoga. I was so like, everyone there was doing like incredible headstand poses and I couldn't even do, oh my God, I've got the term. It was like the very beginner term if you were going to go into a headstand. The first pose you do, crow, I want to say, what's it called?
Oh yeah, crow, Bakasana, when you're yeah. bringing your knees onto your upper arms. Yeah.
Yes. I can't do, I'd never done that and I just couldn't do it. I could maybe hold it for like all of 5 seconds. And when everyone else around you is like, oh, suddenly naturally brilliant at it, you can't help but feel like shit because you're just comparing yourself. And one thing I yeah. talk a lot about now with my intuitive movement clients and the people I work with, that is to help them have a better relationship with movement. And I would wish I would go back to my 2018 self and say, you can still enjoy something and not be good at it. And you, yeah. That isn't a requirement of you actually partaking in the class, whether it be yoga, whether it be surfing, whether it be whatever. Like, you don't actually have to be good at it for you to give it a go. Like, that's not a requirement. And I feel like people do, and especially I imagine in yoga, because like I say, the poses especially, they kind of feel like, oh, unless I can do X, Y, Z, I'm not going to be able to do that class and blah, blah, blah. And I imagine it puts people off.
It absolutely puts people off. And it removes the fun. Like you're saying, you yes. didn't have a good time feeling like that. And to balance only on your hands, let's say, and you'd never done it before, and you were able to hold it for 5 seconds, like that, to me, I hear that and I'm like, that's amazing. And I understand why you wouldn't have that mindset when everyone around you feels like they're basically a gymnast. But that doesn't mean that also, like, in my mind, when I think have something like that, I'm like, the person at the front there that I really feel like I want to be able to do that posture, there is someone in front of them who can do that posture different, better, longer, prettier than them. And they're thinking about that. Do you know what yeah. I mean? Or they could be thinking about that. Like, there's always, like with weight loss, there's always the next bit down.
There's always that upward comparison, isn't there? Of like, there's always, you can always be better. You can always strive for more. And you're right. That's such parallels with diet culture there and diet culture thinking and diet mentality thinking of like, okay, well, I got to this point. Now I have to improve to the next level. And we can't just ever be satisfied with where we're at.
It can be really fun to be bad at things. Mm. Like, learning is really fun, and to be messy and to put no pressure on yourself and to feel like a beginner. If you come into that with the energy that it you are a beginner, you will mess up, but there's loads to learn and there's loads to explore. And that is really exciting, I think. Or it obviously can be really scary as well. And you need to have someone making you feel really comfortable, I think, for it to feel like an exciting thing. And I think there's many things that are like said in yoga that create this hierarchy of asana, hierarchy of postures of that I don't think teachers are even realizing they're saying, like, for like, if they're saying, if you can't do this, something which maybe we perceive to be more complicated, do this. So it's like, oh, I failed at this. Now I'm going to do the easy thing. And it's tiny little bits of language that reinforce this idea that we should be doing the harder thing, and if we're not doing the harder thing, we are a bad person, which is just so horrible to experience as a practitioner. And also, I think, makes the progress less fun. Like, it's great to progress. It's great to move towards postures you couldn't do before. There are so many lessons in failing at postures and, you know, becoming better at things. Like, that's so much fun. But we take away all that fun when it's like, if I'm not perfect, it's not worth it.
Yes.
Like, if I'm not good at this straight away, it's not worth it. Which, yeah, I get all the time. Like, I'm not, I say this and I'm not like above any of these thoughts. Like, they happen for me, absolutely. Right? We just, yeah, like, it's, you know, you can know it all in your brain, but to not feel it, well, that's a different kettle of fish. Like, it helps when you're aware, it becomes, I think I've got a lot better at it, but it's not gone.
Oh, absolutely.
Just trying to bat it away.
I'm still a perfectionist. I still want to do things right. I still get frustrated. I want to be good at all the things. And like you say, there's certainly that voice still running riot at times. And yet now you have the other voice that goes, okay, you're also just a human being. You're also just trying to figure it out. Like, it's not that deep. It's not that serious. No. Like, you're just having fun.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Movement on a basic level is like adult playtime, right?
Yeah.
It should be treated as if this is like the physical break away from all the other stuff going on in your life, and you can do with that what you will, and make it playful, make it fun, make it like, just give stuff a go. Like, it's really not that deep. And I always say that when I'm teaching to people, like, this isn't that deep. We're just having fun. Like, it's not the end of the world if you didn't do your best class today, whatever your best is. It doesn't matter. The main thing that matters is that you have time for you. And that's all we care about. And that maybe you've chosen to move in this way this time, and other times you'll do another form of movement. That's okay.
I think we also have this stereotype of the yoga space as like very serious, like a very like pure and serious space. And I think like cultivating a focus space is really amazing. I don't think it always has to be a really dry focus space, but I think sometimes that focus is really wonderful and helps you connect. And I think discipline is, again, a really wonderful part of the practice. But those things don't have to mean serious. Like, we don't have to have like an entirely silent space. And if you accidentally like kick something over, you get like daggers in the eyes from like four people who are like sitting there trying to like meditate as hard as they can. That also, I think, comes into other wellness practices as well, that it must be really serious. Because the more serious it is, the more important it is, and the more like your spiritual growth is going to happen. And I think for some people, those spaces are great. And I think if that's how you like your space held, that's lovely. But I don't respond well to feeling like I'm a naughty school child. I want like there to be just a bit of like a sense of joy in the space. And that doesn't mean like cracking jokes, you know, being really over the top, but just like, you know, we can have fun here. Yeah. And if something goes wrong, it's not bad.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same. Like, I like a certain level. I know when I'm teaching as well, like, we're like you say, it's not like a laugh a minute necessarily, but that there's this I want to create a lightness where it's like you get to do what you need to do today, and there's no judgment around that, and I'm not in charge, and like, you report to me, and you know, I get to decide whether you've done a good job or not today. You have the autonomy. You get to make the choice about what the class is like for you, and you get to decide how you want to move today. Maybe you do want to challenge yourself today. Maybe that is not on your agenda, and what you need today is to just be here in this room, and that is fine too. And I think that unspoken isn't there, sort of, I don't want to use the word permission, because I feel like that implies that like I'm an authority in that respect, but that you create an atmosphere where people get to make those choices for themselves. And like you say, as an instructor, when I'm teaching, for example, I'll teach some spin classes tomorrow, I will repeatedly say, like, you know your body best, you know what feels good, I trust you, trust yourself, you know? And I think sadly a lot of people do not trust themselves, and they do look for that guidance, and they do look for people to kind of tell them what's wrong and right, and this is good and this is bad, and you're not doing enough, do more. But really, actually, the power comes in helping people trust themselves again. And that is the lasting piece for me when it comes to movement, that if you have that connection and trust with yourself and things are on your terms, it's a whole different experience.
Yeah, completely. And that, you, when you say it, it's so simple, but it's, if you, especially I think if you don't, like it in so many ways, it's such a gift to get to part of your job to be connecting back to your body or working with your body or working in a way that makes you feel good and supports your own wellness. But if, you know, you do 1 hour of intentional movement a week and that's what you can carve out in your schedule and that's, you know, absolutely lovely, and your whole life you've been told like it only counts from when it burns, or if you don't hit a number of calories, the movement doesn't, it might as well not happen, or it doesn't matter how your body feels, if it hurts, that means it's working. To slowly, yeah, come back to, I know my body, I can feel my body, I know what feels good. It's the most empowering thing you can give to a student. And it sounds simple, but it is, I think, massive.
I think that's why now I've really steered towards helping people cultivate that relationship with their bodies, because to me, that is the most rewarding thing, because who am I to tell you what's best for you? But I want to help you figure it out. I felt that there was something missing there. And I suppose likewise, you have within yoga, right? Within that yoga community, that we need to have more conversations around how we can make this more inclusive.
Completely. And I think there's an interesting thing with all, to an element with all spiritual wellness practices, is that we have this lingering overhang from the culture of gurus that has, some people have taken advantage of that position. Like there are lots of people in the yoga space who have done really terrible things because people are, I think, drawn to wellness, drawn to yoga when they are vulnerable, and they don't want to think about that autonomy. They just want to hand themselves over and be like, you guide me. And then there are people in positions of power who abuse that and take advantage of those people. And I think sometimes that has trickled down into yoga, into wellness, that like the teacher just says it and they don't have to explain.
Yeah,
they don't have to tell you why. You just, and I think there is something to be said. Like, I'm definitely like, I want to understand. I want to ask questions. I want to understand the why behind everything. And sometimes I think it is just good to sit and experience, and like, I don't need to keep asking questions. I can just like to try and turn that part of my brain off and experience. But there is a hangover of, just believing that, I think yoga teachers like know what is better for you, have more spiritual worth than you, are like, yeah, innately better than you in some way. And I think that's really dangerous and really problematic. And as teachers, we shouldn't be doing anything to encourage that, because sometimes that's not what the teacher's doing. That's what the student's bringing to the space. But I think as teachers, we have to be super, super aware that we are not cultivating that in any way.
Yeah, yeah. On an extreme level, like, you know, it can get a bit culty. Can get a bit culty.
Absolutely. There's also like the yoga clique, isn't there? It's not a cult necessarily, but I know there's like the cool teachers or like the studios people are in with, or the like, I think there's a real thing of encouraging practitioners to become teachers because they have a good physical practice, which doesn't mean that they have a good awareness of the practice as a whole. It doesn't mean that they will necessarily be good teachers. I think lots of people do teacher trainings to deepen their practice, but I think there has been a history of studios being like, you're really good at, you know, your handstands and your headstands, you come on the teacher training. And they're not necessarily, you know, coming from a place of wanting to share the practice.
Being good at something and then helping other people achieve that are actually two very different things. And yeah, I could completely. Say the same for the fitness industry. You know, just because you're good at working out doesn't mean you're good at helping other people work out, nor should you be helping people work out.
Yeah, and it's a skill, right? So it's a skill that we should be cultivating. Like, you don't have to begin being a fitness practitioner or begin being a yoga teacher and be a good teacher yes. or a good guide maybe straight away. But we also, like, if you're not good at the guiding or the teaching bit, you need to invest in that as much as you invest in lifting things up or doing your, you know, physical practice. It's all like, you don't have to be good at it straight away, but we have to acknowledge that it's a skilled thing. And also being able to teach in an inclusive way, I think any type of movement is an incredibly skilled practice. To be able to teach multiple ability levels, beginners, experienced people all in the same room, like people who can do that well, I think it's such an amazing skill. And I think it really, when you get a teacher that is just teaching in whatever they're teaching to one group of people, all they're going to get is that group of people. Like, people will come, they will know it's not for them, and then they will leave. And they'll be like, why aren't there more people at the studio of a diverse range of ethnicities, body sizes, all the rest of it? It's like, well, because you don't put on anything that supports them. They probably come and then leave.
Yeah.
They probably are coming to try it and then they're going off.
It's so true. So on a practical level, I wanted to ask, are there just a few little nuggets that you would like to share with fellow yoga teachers who may be listening to the podcast about just small ways in which they can make a big difference in creating a more inclusive space?
Yeah. I would say practice with a diverse group of teachers. We have access to the internet. There are so many amazing teachers in different bodies, and those teachers will naturally we'll find it easier to teach towards what they look like. And I think we can just get so much information from going to classes, seeing how other people teach. There's always something to learn there. If you don't feel like you have plus size people coming to your classes, or you feel less confident just because you haven't had the experience of teaching people in bigger bodies, if you can find like a family member, a friend that you can teach a little bit to and get some really honest feedback. So someone who's going to be honest with you, and it doesn't need to be loads, but I think if you haven't got experience of living in that body, speaking to someone who actually lives in that body will just be so helpful. And I would always think about how you can create space. Like, if you can imagine what it's like to have more mass on the front of your body or on your legs or, you know, on your bum, like, we can imagine what it's like to have a different body. And I would remind people that if it's a shape where if you were smaller you'd have more space, how can you create that space if someone had a bigger proportions? I think it's really helpful to think about it like proportions, because I think sometimes we get a bit like uncomfortable being like, I've got a big belly, I've got big boobs, whatever. So if you can think about like, oh, I've got a wider set of hips and I'm going to do the same thing, how would that work? But if you can, I would practice with teachers in different bodies and try and, if you don't have the opportunity to speak to your students, find people you can speak to who have different bodies to you and get some real honest feedback.
And I suppose follow you on Instagram and other diverse teachers, right?
Yeah, completely. I run size inclusive trainings. There are other people who run inclusive trainings, like, that they exist. And I think it's a great place to start, and it's a great place to ask loads of questions. So if you want formalized trainings, I've got one coming up in London in September. And or if you're going to do a teacher training, ask if there's parts on inclusivity. Ask if there are people coming in from diverse backgrounds to teach about inclusivity. And if not, ask why not? Because they should be included on those trainings. And they're starting to, absolutely. But, you know, if you're paying for an experience, you have some power in changing how that experience is delivered.
Absolutely. So, Lucy, before we finish, I have to ask you, as I ask everyone, what has been your most recent train happy moment?
So I started climbing at the beginning of this year. One of the places I teach is a bouldering centre.
Oh, cool.
So we can climb there when we're teaching. And I've been like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to climb. It's stupid. Which normally, if I'm being that negative about something, it's probably something that I want to do and I don't feel like I can do, and I'm having a little tantrum about. And then this year I was like, no, you want to try this. And I have been going once a week with my friend who also teaches there, who is a really good climber, who's been helping me out. And we go in the morning when it's dead, so there's no one around, and it's so much fun. It's so hard, but we've been going once a week now, so for like 6 months-ish. And I haven't really been tracking my progress, but she was helping me with a route and she was like, use your feet. And I haven't been able to work out how to use my feet. Like, I've been doing it all in my arms. And she was like, use your feet, put your weight into your feet. And I did it. And I was like, oh my, you've been telling me to do that for 6 months and I haven't been able to do that. And I used my feet and it made it a lot easier. And I was like, wow, I am making progress at this. And I really just love that it's just so out of my comfort zone, and I've managed to like make a commitment to doing it regularly, and I've made it like a social fun thing as well together. So yeah, that was a really good moment.
I love that. I think like you say, especially things like, is it like indoor climbing, was it bouldering? Because I know they're slightly different, aren't they?
Yeah, it's bold, I think, but the climbing purists would say bouldering. Yeah, there's no ropes.
Right.
There's no ropes.
Which is even tougher, right? So
yeah.
I love that you're doing that. I love that you're trying something like totally different. And I also love that they put on yoga classes. Like, that's cool as well.
Yeah, it's real good complementary movement.
Yeah, totally.
Generalization, climbing makes you really move forwards and yoga makes you open up.
Well, Lucy, this has been fab. Where can people follow you, practice with you, learn from you, and where can they do all of that?
So I am on Instagram at Lucy B Yoga, just the letter. My website is also Lucy B Yoga. I have online classes that I teach. I teach in person around South London, and then I do lots of events. My trainings are all on my website, and I've also got a retreat coming up in Tuscany this August, which is an inclusive yoga retreat. We've got 2 spaces left. So if you are, you know, wanting to go all the way to Italy to do yoga with me, then that's a way you could do
it. What a place to do it. Sounds incredible.
Very nice, very nice. It's going to be full of carbs and yoga. It's gonna be great.
Oh, sounds fab. Lucy, this has been a pleasure. I hope I get to meet you in person, and I hope I get to maybe come to class one day. I would love that.
That would be so nice. I would love that too. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's been really lovely to virtually meet you.
But that is it for this week's episode of the Train Happy podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you took something away from this episode. And if you did, please do let us know on social media. You can find us on Instagram at Train Happy Podcast. And we do want to hear from you. We want your questions. We want to hear your Train Happy moments. And we'd love to feature you as Train Happy Trooper of the Week. So remember, you can get in touch with us via our WhatsApp. It is 07599927537. And whatever podcast platform you're choosing to listen to us on, please rate and review. It really helps the show and it really helps spread the Train a Happy message. And that is it for this week. I'll be back with a brand new episode for you next Monday. See you then.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.